is the Silmarillion elf propaganda. It's certainly very focused on the elves rather than dwarves, say, or humans, but how biased is it? Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. On this channel, we cover The Lord of the Rings in nerdy detail, as well as other great fantasy worlds like A Song of Ice and Fire and The Witcher. Welcome. We often talk about the Silmarillion as a sort of world book, providing objective truth about Middle-earth and the Legendarium. But is it? Is that what Tolkien gave us? As I've explained elsewhere, Tolkien's writing conceit for almost his entire Legendarium is that he is merely a professor who has come upon and translated some ancient manuscripts. In this context, in world, the manuscripts that make up the five books of the Silmarillion were written by, well, it's complicated, and I did a whole other video on that if you're interested, but the short version is that the first two parts seem to have been written by Rumil, a Noldo elf who lived in the Blessed Realm. The third and largest part by Pengaloth, another elf, this time of Sindarin and Noldorin descent, who lived in Western Middle-earth. The fourth part is written originally by Elendil, the elf friend, and the final part by an unknown author, probably from Minas Tirith. All parts seem to have passed through various editors, probably mostly Gondorian. So, the Silmarillion is mostly or entirely written by elves and elf friends, based in the Blessed Realm and Western Middle-earth. And so the history it tells is understandably focused on the elves. That's not just me saying that, by the way, it was Tolkien's own view. In trying to sell the Silmarillion to a publisher named Milton Waldman, he wrote this: "The Silmarillion's centre of view and interest is not men, but elves. Men come in, inevitably. After all, the author is a man, and if he has an audience, they will be men, and men must come into our tales as such, and not merely transfigured or partially represented as elves, dwarfs, hobbits, etc. But they remain peripheral, latecomers, and, however growingly important, not principals." So the Silmarillion's central view and interest is elves. Everyone else is peripheral. Tolkien's words. In practice, this means that the text focuses on what is happening with the elves, not so much other races, throughout the entire span of history that it covers. And when we do encounter other races, it is mostly in relation to how they interact with elves, not whatever else they might have been doing that was important to them. Take the dwarves as an example. We read about their creation, and we're told that they are then put to sleep until their time to awake and move in Middle-earth. Then the next we read of them is when they journeyed over the Blue Mountains into Beleriand and encounter the elves. We're told that the elves were filled with amazement, for they had believed themselves to be the only living things in Middle-earth that spoke with words or wrought with hands. Clearly, in the time that preceded that, the dwarves had awoken and established their seven tribes and homelands, digging out great cities underground and no doubt facing great perils and achieving great things. But we get no account of that, other than the names of their lands. Of the wonders of Khazad-dûm we hear very, very little. Of the four tribes of dwarves in the east, almost nothing. Literally millennia go by in the narrative with no mention of what is going on with the dwarves, until they happen to interact with the elves once more. The same can be said of hobbits, or even more so of ents, or orcs, or trolls, or any of the other races of Middle-earth. It's so clear that there are whole subgenres of fantasy devoted to the idea that, say, the orcs have been misunderstood. The same is, of course, true geographically in relation to those areas of the map to the east and south. When Tolkien was asked about what happened to the two blue wizards who journeyed to the east, he replied in a letter like this: "I really do not know anything clearly about the other two, since they do not concern the history of the Northwest." Simply put, Tolkien only concerned himself at any level of significant detail with the history of the northwest of Middle-earth. And this is true even for the many elves who were not based in the northwest of Middle-earth, like the Avari, who refused the initial summons of the Valar to travel west. At least six tribes of the Avari survived through to the Third Age, but we know very little about what happened to them for thousands of years other than at a very high level. The same can be said for the Vanyar, who responded positively, headed to the Blessed Realm, and largely stayed there. Which all adds up to what we said earlier. The Silmarillion is not a world book. It is not meant to describe all of the history of Middle-earth or Arda. just that of some peoples in some parts of it, by which we mostly mean the elves who lived in the northwest of Middle-earth. But, okay, to return to the original idea we were exploring, even if the text is focused on elves in the northwest of Middle-earth, that doesn't mean it's biased in what it does say. Of course not. But sometimes it clearly is. Let's take an example of the Petty Dwarves. The Silmarillion tells us this about the Petty Dwarves, that they appeared on the elves' radar before the rest of the dwarves. Before the dwarves of Nogrod and Belagost came west over the mountains, the elves of Beleriand knew not what these others were, and they hunted them and slew them. But afterwards they left them alone, and they were called the Nigith Nibin, the Petty Dwarves, in the Sindarin tongue. They loved none but themselves, and if they feared and hated the orcs, they hated the Eldar no less, and the exiles most of all, for the Noldor, they said, had stolen their lands and their homes. Long ere King Finrod Felagund came over the sea, the caves of Nargothrond were discovered by them, and by them its delving was begun, and beneath the crown of Amon-Ruth, the Bald Hill, the slow hands of the Petty Dwarves had bored and deepened the caves through the long years that they dwelt there, untroubled by the grey elves of the woods. It's not hard to read this and imagine that there might be another perspective on events, from the Petty Dwarves themselves. From their perspective, they had been living in the caves of Nargothrond for a while, digging and mining and making the place inhabitable, doing what dwarves do. Then the Noldor elves arrived and stole their lands and their homes. The elves hunted them down and killed them, wiping them out to the last man, or dwarf. We even meet the last of these people, called Mime, in the Silmarillion. He's not a particularly sympathetic character, but literally everyone in his family and race had been systematically hunted down and killed over the preceding years by elves and their allies with seemingly no provocation, so I kind of go easy on him. We have words in the English language for deliberately killing everyone in a particular ethnic group, like the elves killed all of the Petty Dwarves, and they aren't complimentary. But in the Silmarillion, it is presented as a simple misunderstanding. No harm done. And to rub it all in, even the name we have for that group of dwarves, the Petty Dwarves, is quite an insult. It's what the elves called them. They are petty, of little importance, trivial. In fact, when they first met them, they just disdainfully called them two-legged animals. But as I said, this is completely glossed over in the Silmarillion. We're just told that, and I quote, "The elves of Beleriand knew not what these others were, and they hunted them and slew them." Then, later in the same paragraph, we're told that this was to such a great extent that only three of them were left when they became important to the story of the elves. The extent to which this is passed over without so much as a recognition that an entire race of people had been destroyed leaves quite a bitter taste in the mouth. Tolkien never shied away from the hard details of history. In case you are wondering, we're not even told what they called themselves, though we know they called their land Nulukizdin, which roughly translates as Land of the Moon Dwarves. So perhaps they called themselves the Moon Dwarves. Maybe we should call them that instead of the Petty Dwarves. Just a thought. And as we're on naming people, we should probably note that in the Silmarillion and in other parts of Tolkien's writings that Christopher Tolkien could have included in the Silmarillion, it's clear that the elves had a less than complimentary name for the rest of the dwarves when they encountered them, the stunted people. As for humans, among other things, the elves called them the sickly, the usurpers, the strangers, the self-cursed, the heavy-handed, the night-fearers. Tolkien obviously knew and understood the power of language, so perhaps this, on another level, is even a point against the idea that the Silmarillion is pro-elf. Perhaps he is here subtly showing us a bit about the character of the elves themselves, that they would label others like this. There is, however, definitely an air of elf superiority that permeates the whole narrative. Some is perhaps justified. They are undoubtedly more powerful overall than other races in Middle-earth, but there is an underlying assumption that they are top of the tree morally as well, and by nature, as it were. which Tolkien seems to place in direct contrast to the behaviour of the elves, particularly in the First Age. There are kinslayings, betrayals and unsympathetic characters galore. The results of the oath taken by the Sons of Feanor is consistently held up as an unambiguously bad thing. The almost ethereal beauty and purity of the elves presented in Peter Jackson's films, for example, is in direct contrast to the horrific acts that their contemporaries committed in earlier ages. So, where does all of that leave us? Is the Silmarillion elf propaganda? Well, propaganda is definitely too strong a word here. No one could read it and think that the elves are always pure or good or right, but this narrative is undoubtedly biased towards elves, inasmuch as it is mostly written by elves and edited by elf sympathisers, tells the story of elves at the exclusion of all other races, ends pretty much when the elves leave Middle-earth. There's no account of the Fourth Age dominion of man here, presents the elves as superior to other races, and doesn't give the other races the right of reply. But crucially, the Silmarillion does not pretend to be objective, rather a collection of legends and histories from the wise. 36 times the text prefaces a story or account with, "it is said," and another 25 times with, "it is told." Indeed, the whole Quenta Silmarillion, the largest part of the whole narrative, opens with that phrase, "it is told." It is told among the wise that the first war began before Arda was full-shaped, and ere yet there was anything that grew or walked upon earth, and for long Melkor had the upper hand. The Silmarillion is simply not presented as objective truth. It is presented as an Elven account, and mostly Noldorin account, of what happened in the First Age in northwestern Middle-earth, and some of what happened before and after. It never pretends to give the perspective of other races or those who lived in other parts of Arda, and Tolkien was completely open about that. How should this then affect our reading of the Silmarillion? I think it means we should take it as it is, an elf-centric worldview, knowing that the dwarves and humans and even other elves would have perhaps disputed parts of it, but it is the best history we have. Tolkien didn't write an easy history for his created world. There is no objective, absolutely true narrative of everything that happened in Middle-earth. Instead, he created an interactive world for us to dive into. And this shines into the story we know. Gandalf made mistakes. Galadriel had flaws. Even Sauron was once not evil. This is not the monochrome good versus evil that it is sometimes portrayed as. The events of the Silmarillion may well be remembered or interpreted differently by other peoples, or by us as we critically analyse what happened. This is a grown-up, complex world for adults, where we are given the space to draw our own thoughts and judgments about the actions of its actors. And that is what makes it feel so real. If you'd like to see more videos diving deep into the world of J.R.R. Tolkien and The Lord of the Rings, please click on the link to the playlist on the left of your screen now. Or if you'd like to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.